Well, good morning. Good morning. It is great to see everybody here. Thank you, President Susi and the Speaker Shurtleff. I remembered your name. I was going to throw something in there, but, you know. But obviously, honorable members of the House and Senate who have joined us here today. You know, this is one of those rare times. We have so many folks in this audience to really thank who really make a lot of New Hampshire what it is. We have the members of the Supreme Court, the justices, the federal court. We have our esteemed executive council here, which obviously I'm quite partial to. All the members of our commissioners and our directors that represent the state, that manage the ins and outs of the business. Obviously, there's a lot of friends and family here. It is absolutely great to see them. And it goes without saying, the one who really makes this all happen, my amazing wife, Valerie. It's an absolute honor when someone, a group of folks, 1.35 million people, put their faith in you, in the trust to be governor. It's an honor to stand up here. It's very humbling in many, many different ways. I also want to take the moment to really acknowledge, you never can say enough, when you talk about having the National Guard in here and our military families and the facts we have folks serving from New Hampshire, both serving abroad and here in country, maybe not in the state with us today. The sacrifices that they make, the sacrifices their family makes, veterans, that obligation that we carry with us, making sure that we're standing by them, for them, providing the services they need while they stand up for us. So to everyone who has or is currently wearing a uniform, thank you. Thank you very much. So as you know, I do not normally write speeches. So writing a speech is always a bit of a challenge, and I'm going to do my best to stick to it. I'll try my best not to ramble on. I see they have sat Ruth Griffin and Ray Wieczorek next to each other. Right? Someone gets it. So if I see them nodding off, I know I've gone too long. I love you guys. Well, Ray's like Valerie's boyfriend. Ruth is like my girlfriend. It all works out. In November, you know, the voters in this state, not just for governor, but as they came out, whether it was for the county seats, or the state seats, or the House, or the Senate, they really set us on a path. And it does require that we, as state leaders, come together, truly embrace a spirit of cooperation, work together to get things done for the state of New Hampshire. And we have to remember that there are 1.35 million people counting on that, and they truly deserve nothing less. We were sent to Concord to fix problems, to create opportunities, and to embrace the power of the individual. I talk about that a lot. Make no mistake, we've made great progress in the past 2 years, but there is surely a lot of work to be done. In just the last 2 years, we've established things like full-day kindergarten. We signed the most comprehensive child welfare bill in the state's history. We provided tax relief for small businesses. And with the implementation of our new hub-and-spoke model, now known as the Doorway, this very week, opening their doors across the state of New Hampshire, we've created opportunities for us to truly tackle one of the state's biggest crises, the opioid epidemic. We worked together, bipartisanly, in a way that, frankly, was a moment of real pride, I think, for all of us in the last session, when we decided that we wouldn't let partisanship come in the way, and we'd make sure that 50,000 Granite Staters, low-income Granite Staters, those who are out there doing everything they can to make a living, to provide for their families, we made sure that they will have health care through our expanded Medicaid program. And we have to remember, it's not just what we've done, it's really how we did it. We did it in our own way, in an innovative way. We did it putting forth a strong work requirement, which gives people the dignity of work. We've saved hundreds of millions of dollars in the system. We've become a model, frankly, for other states to emulate. when it comes to managing and simply providing the best services to our citizens. But when we look back at what we've accomplished, we can't lose sight of why we're here. As I said, in public service, it's just as important as how you get there as the goals that you achieve. In New Hampshire, we know we're best when we work together, and that's obviously what we must do. And whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an Independent or a Libertarian, we all share a passion for making our communities the strongest they can be, a commitment to making sure that New Hampshire simply remains the best place to live, work, and raise a family. I've often said that we do not let the dysfunction of Washington, D.C. define the successes here in our great state. And it is true that politics does not and should not dictate policy. We treat each other with respect, with civility, not like some of the circus theatrics we see about 800 miles south of us. I did travel down to Washington recently, though. I spent some moments honoring one of America's true heroes, someone who really understood what public service was about. And to be down there following President Bush's passing, I think for everyone, not just myself, but I think I can speak, it was truly a reminder across the country what good public service was really about, what giving of yourself really was. Getting out of your comfort sometimes and doing the right thing, it's not always easy, but in terms of leadership and whether you're a House member, whether you're a governor, whatever it might be, it's really incumbent upon us to lead by example. And when you look at what President Bush did, how we treated people, how we truly treated people, it's kind of like, as we say, he did it the New Hampshire way. He talked to you as an individual. He listened to your issues, and he let people drive the policy needs of the country. And again, that 4 or 5 days where it was sad to be sure, but I think everyone was able to take a deep breath, pause, and remember what real good public service was all about. It isn't always about going after funding. It isn't about picketing and protests. It's truly about bringing people together. A very smart man once said, "It is our choices that show what we truly are far more than our abilities." And that quote really rings with me. That wise man, I'm not going to lie to you, was Dumbledore from the Harry Potter series. It's true. But it is true. It is our choices. And that's what good public service is all about. I also recently saw an interview about a month ago with another great New Hampshire native, I'm a big fan of, Adam Sandler. And it was interesting to hear him reflect a little bit on his life and his career. And he said something. He said, "I wasn't a kid growing up thinking that one day I'll get an Oscar and stand on a stage and make speeches. That just wasn't who I was." And I thought about that a little bit. And it kind of rang very similarly, to be honest. You know, growing up, I think a lot of you know I'm number 7 of 8 kids, and I'm proud to be here with a lot of my brothers and sisters, and my parents are here today. And public service isn't something just in our family, it's New Hampshire, right? We're all here. We're all public servants. It's what we do. It's in our blood. It's in our communities, right? Whether you're a teacher, whether you volunteer at a nonprofit, right? It's about giving of ourselves. Now, in the political sphere, if you will, there was something that resonated with me when I heard that quote. This is where I'm going to tell a story and probably embarrass myself more than my family, but I think it was 1980. It was the U.S. Senate race. My father was running for U.S. Senate, and no, he didn't win. And of all things, we'd get pulled around to a lot of different events here and there, and one of the events, I never liked to go. I was incredibly shy. I would, believe it or not, I was really incredibly shy, as my mother can attest to. I was like the kid holding on to my mother's leg, praying I didn't have to go out on a public stage or anything. And one day we were taken to an event, and I was probably 6 years old at the time, and I wasn't really paying attention, and we got there, and no one was really telling me what we're doing. I was just kind of hanging around in the back, and I quickly realized this was a fashion show. Whose brilliant idea this was to parade kids out in a fashion show, I don't know, but when they pulled out the blue plaid suit and said, "This is what you're going to wear, get on out there," and no matter how much I cried and protested, I was forced out there. People were laughing, too. I don't know. I thought it was pretty cruel, frankly. But I remember thinking, I was 6 years old, and I promise you, I remember thinking, if this is what politics is about, I don't want any part of it. Right? And that, trust me, that has stayed with me. You think I forgot? It has stayed with me all those years. It's traumatizing. But it was, in many ways, I think it was part of the lesson of being in New Hampshire. My parents knew it wasn't easy for us to go and do all that stuff, and I know it's not easy for my kids and your kids, for those who are elected officials in the public sphere, especially now more than ever, whether it's social media or the negativity or the partisanship. It's not easy on families. It's tough. Ask this one right here. She'll tell you. She could write a book on how hard it is sometimes on families. But it's what we do. It's giving of yourself. It's getting out of that comfort zone, because at the end of the day, we have to remember the job is bigger than ourselves. It's not about our individual issues, our individual priorities. It is truly bigger than ourselves, and we have to get out of that comfort zone, get out of the walls of the state house, engage with individuals, right? Get into communities, find out what is truly happening out there, and again, let those individuals with their stories drive better policy. So when we talk about policy, when we talk about good public service, I go back to two of the foremost cruxes, the axioms that I fall into are management and customer service. Good management, quality customer service. The goal should be to truly create an inclusive, all and welcoming environment for our citizens, so that we can walk out there as public officials, as commissioners, whoever it might be, and say, this is who we are and how can we truly help? Therefore, our obligation often is to pull the limits, to really get out of outside those comfort zones. It's one of the reasons, you see, I've been known to partake in various experiences, right? Last week, I was jumping in the Atlantic Ocean with Chucky Rosa to bring awareness to the opioid crisis. And that's not easy in the middle of December, trust me. Or this past summer, I did the death-defying feat with Senator Ayotte, who's joining us today, to rappel down a 24-story building. And for a guy who's deathly afraid of heights, let me tell you, it's not easy. But it helps bring awareness. We're raising money for Granite United Way. Last year, I joined my commissioners, joined me. George Capatis raised about $15,000 himself, God bless it. And we all slept out on the streets of Manchester to raise money and awareness for homelessness, right? And it gets people involved. It gets people noticing. It gets people understanding how they can become more involved in their communities in a variety of different ways. So there's one story I want to tell you as well. Another organization Valerie and I are very passionate about is Best Buddies. It's a great organization. It builds friendships and social bonds for kids with disabilities. And you know, Valerie has really led the charge here in the state with Sarah Dennehy, just done some amazing stuff. But half was convinced by Valerie, that I was going to ride a 50-mile bike ride, right? To raise money and awareness for Best Buddies. It's just a great organization. And God bless it, a bunch of people joined my team. And two of the individuals that joined my team, there were some folks from the state that joined. Nicole from the Liquor Commission joined. And two of our newest members of state government, Christine Tappan, who is Associate Commissioner at the Department of Health and Human Services, and Christine Brennan, who's our Deputy Commissioner of Education. Neither of us had ever really ridden bikes for any appreciable time, any appreciable length, and so we'd do these practices. And one day we're out there practicing and we're riding, and we're just trying to not like fall in a pothole or hit dirt and flip over and the whole thing. And at one point, I don't think I told him I was going to tell the story, but I don't care. Chris Tappan is here, and Chris Brennan is there, and I'm in the middle. We're like the three Chris's going down the road, and again, I'm just trying to keep it all together. And they're chatting back and forth. And they had this amazing conversation, and it was about what's happening at Health and Human Services with child welfare, with some of the exciting things, how we're transforming DCYF, the programs that are there. And Chris Brennan is talking about the things at education and how a lot of those programs are similar. And how sometimes, you know, you get an email or they'll get a phone call between departments. But there were actually individuals in those departments that had never met the other individuals in the other departments. But they were working on very similar things. And it was this amazing moment. And within weeks, Valerie heard the story. And she opened up the Bridges House. And they brought their teams together for the first time in a long time. And really brought them together to share ideas within government. And I think a lot of times we take it for granted, but you got to make sure the left hand knows what the right hand is doing, right? So there's not duplicative of efforts. This is not conflicting efforts, frankly. So there's a sharing of ideas and really opening up of possibilities. And when that happened, that was one of the things I said, well, I got to keep doing this stuff because you never know what the next adventure might bring. But it really was amazing. We didn't fall, by the way. I was a little paranoid of that. I didn't know if there was like going to be some sort of human resources issue. I had pressed them into service if they had fallen and gotten hurt. But But it really was quite an amazing moment. And it set a tone and a lesson for a lot of our other commissioners, right? To challenge ourselves within the departments. Remember, we have 10,000 state employees out there. That's a lot of folks doing good, hard work. But you got to challenge. You got to challenge the directors. You got to challenge the division heads, right? What are you doing? How are you doing it? Have you talked to these folks? Can we get together? Can we build relationships? And again, this is not meant as a criticism to any individual department or division or anything, but it's the natural order of things. If you let government just go, it tends to fall into silos. It's very easy to folks to keep processing and bureaucracies and fiefdoms, but it's very easy to just keep processing what they need to process without stretching a little bit, without making that extra phone call. And that's really where the efficiency of government can come into play, and ultimately that truly leads to better customer service, right? Better service for those individuals, for those citizens. And you have to notice that, again, there's nothing political in any of that. There's nothing Republican or Democrat here. It's trying to just instill some good management practices. And we have some tremendous, tremendous commissioners working for the state right now. It's an absolute honor every time we get together. There's a good sharing of ideas. They're talking to each other. They're talking to their departments, right? There's a great checks and balance within that system. And again, whether you're a qualified nominee to be brought before the executive council as a judge or on the board of dietitians, or maybe someone we're going to hire to work in the opioid crisis. It's all about building those personal relationships and making sure that politics doesn't get in the way of simply folks that want to get up and have the qualifications to serve the best they can. I travel to Washington a lot. I don't know if folks know this, but a lot of states hire lobbyists. Governors will hire lobbyists to represent them in Washington, D.C. I didn't know that before I became governor. I don't believe in that. I don't do that. I get on a plane and I fly down there, right? Yeah, it saves you a few bucks. Don't worry. But again, it also simply gets better results. The Republicans love that. But it really gets better results. You know, I'll fly down and we'll sit with individuals and you build relationships so you can not, so when you do have to pick up the phone in a moment's notice, they know who you are. They can picture your face. They know what you're about. They know what the issues of New Hampshire are really being driven here. And that's allowed us to get a lot of opportunity. And I never understand a lot of the criticism, frankly, that we get, oh, he spends too much time in Washington. Well, let me tell you something. I'm very proud of what we've accomplished. When the Manchester VA had a crisis, in 2 hours, Secretary Shulkin was on the phone with us, sending his team up here because he knew us, he knew what the need was, and we've started to really turn things around up there. When there was an issue, we'll go with Voc Rehab, right? There was, frankly, a big mismanagement of funds. And the Voc Rehab program, a program that provides job training skills to kids with disabilities, was going to disappear. It was going to be gone because $1.5 million all of a sudden had disappeared. So I flew down and I sat with Betsy DeVos and I explained to her the issue, and they provided a grant to make sure we had that bridge so that, again, we didn't lose those services. When there was talk about drilling for oil off the coastline of New Hampshire, I didn't write a letter. I got on the plane, I flew down, I sat with Secretary Zinke and assured us that is not going to happen. But that happens again because you build the relationships. Hub and spoke. Let me tell you something. I annoyed the heck out of the White House. I annoyed the heck out of the administration with what I believed we could do with our hub and spoke model. And I gave them the memos and we had our teams go down there and sit with the drugs our time and time. We sat with the president, his administration. And we convinced them, not only did we know what we were doing, but we had a model and a plan, not just for New Hampshire, but something that could be emulated across the country. We received the biggest increase in SOR money, the biggest grant across the country, and they said, we believe in New Hampshire. You're at the tip of the spear, and if we're going to rebuild an infrastructure, this is where it starts, right here in New Hampshire. And today, those doors are open. And it's not just myself, it's the commissioners, it's all the folks across the executive branch getting on those airplanes, traveling down with us, building those relationships, and getting stuff done. And the moral of the story is really this. And especially in this world, you got to be careful. Do not burn bridges. Right? You never know how many times you're going to have to cross that same river. Right? And it's a lesson, again, we talk about partisanship, we talk about working together, bipartisanship. That's a very fine line between those two, but it's truly important. And in New Hampshire, we've done it right. But let's not lose focus. Let's not lose the priority in terms of truly getting stuff done. So one of the key issues that we are dealing with in a very positive way right now is the economy. Our economy is absolutely booming. There is no doubt we are better off today than we were just 2 years ago. We have the lowest poverty rate in the nation. Business taxes are at the lowest in decades, and more people are truly working than ever before. But again, don't make the mistake and take that success for granted. It wasn't luck. It wasn't happenstance. It was hard work, instilling sound economic principles, focusing on creating strong economic opportunities for individuals, providing employers in the state flexibility and financial opportunity that flows down to the employees and their families. In New Hampshire, we've made a choice. We don't want business investing in government. We want business to retain their revenues and invest in their employees. And they do. And it works. This is exactly why. Look at the results. The model works. Young families, businesses, they're all flocking to New Hampshire. Not by accident, because they are choosing to be here. They are choosing to be part of the business-friendly environment that we've created. That's why we've already seen some of the highest household incomes in the country. Our model of success is working. Tax relief is working. And lowering the cost of doing business through tax relief has allowed businesses to truly reinvest in that workforce. It's a key factor in the wage growth we see when a business can retain its revenue, invest in those employees. And again, it's about that opportunity, not just for the businesses, but it flows to families. It flows to a little more discretionary income in folks' pockets. It flows to a stronger economy for all of us, and it creates opportunity here in the state of New Hampshire. We cut taxes, and we've seen more revenue than almost ever before here in the state of New Hampshire. And we're using those surplus funds for smart, one-time investments. Now, I implore this legislature, please learn from some of the mistakes of the past. The last thing we should be doing is raising taxes or pushing a budget that doesn't live in our means. And it goes without saying, there will be no sales or income tax under my watch. So stay tuned. Next month, on Valentine's Day of all days, because I love the state, I will submit a state budget that keeps our commitment to protecting our thriving economy. It'll continue the current schedule of business tax reductions. It will use practical revenue estimates to ensure that we continue to make investments to improve the lives of every citizen in the state that without jeopardizing our financial solvency. Now, before I jump into the real priorities of the state when it comes to the programs we want to invest in, what we want to really focus on, let me take a moment and just talk a little bit about what we mean by priorities. Everyone talks about that word a lot. Everyone has a kind of a different interpretation, I think. And whenever I think about priorities, I do think back. There was a point exactly 20 years ago, frankly. I was out hiking the Appalachian Trail. And when you are living in the woods for 5 months, walking 2,000 miles from Maine to Georgia, let me tell you, you focus on the priorities. It's water, it's shelter, it's food, in that order. That's really it, right? That's survival. And it taught me a lot of lessons, and it's really kind of shaped how I deal with a lot of the challenges that come before me in my life. It serves as a true reminder that in public service, especially, frankly, in public service, it is important to take time here and there, when convenient, to step back and really reevaluate one's goals and stay focused on results that truly make a difference. We're going to have our differences in this chamber, in the governor's office, with the executive council. Of course we're going to have differences. That's okay. And sometimes we're going to passionately disagree, but it's important to work hard and truly keep a rational perspective on what the priorities of the state are. Now, one of the priorities of the state that I think we can all agree on is our workforce needs. When you have more available jobs than ever before and more people working than ever before, we know there are workforce shortages in the state in various areas. And while New Hampshire has clearly become a destination for young workers, one of the immediate challenges is how to retain and grow a true thriving workforce for today and the next generation. And many of you have heard me say this before, but those of us that were born here were lucky, and those of us that moved here were smart. And recently we saw a new study a couple weeks ago that came out of the Carsey School at UNH that was released that shows an increase in young families moving to New Hampshire. It's a very, very positive statistic. And again, it isn't a fluke. It isn't by happenstance. It's because we're creating economic opportunities. We're taking notice. We're pushing the envelope. We have a new Department of Business and Economic Affairs led by Taylor Caswell and his team with Will and Mike Bergeron doing a tremendous job picking up the phone, going after businesses, showing them the very positive regulatory environment, the very positive tax environment that we're creating here. And people are taking notice all across New England. And again, whether it's Hitchener and Milford or Lonza and Portsmouth, BAE in Merrimack, Madeira in Guilford, Allegro in Manchester, Oxenova in Colebrook, Hubbard Farms in Walpole, the list goes on. These are businesses that are moving here, that are growing here, that are expanding here, that are investing their dollars in our communities and in our families. Now, what can we do? What is the role of government here when we talk about workforce? I think that environment that we can create, it starts obviously with education. And we've made some great investments in education, whether it's our career schools, opening up opportunities at the high school level, all the way up into the graduate level. And next month, I'm very proud that we will be proposing the single largest economic investment into workforce the state has ever seen, specifically in our healthcare workforce, in our nurses, which we know is going to be the single greatest need of the state over the next 10 years. We're going to invest $24 million and we're going to double the number of graduates in all of these areas for our state. Now, another key component of growing our workforce is New Hampshire's work requirement for able-bodied individuals who are part of our Medicaid expansion program. The provisions of Medicaid help lift people out of poverty by empowering them with the dignity of work and self-reliability. They help people gain skills necessary for long-term independence and success and entrance into the long-term workforce. We have designed a New Hampshire solution that was the result of a strong bipartisan agreement, and this legislature needs to be sure not to obstruct its implementation. I know that leaders in both parties stand united in ensuring that we are committed to the compromise reached last year to help ensure health care for 50,000 individuals in our state. And let's remember, in approving the work requirement, it was actually the administration in Washington that insisted on more flexibility for our citizens, insisting on flexibility for that would include volunteerism, or job training, or part-time work, or simply going to school. All of these now count toward the work requirement. And it's more flexible now than the bill we even passed last year, and that is a win for New Hampshire citizens. You know, I also believe it's time that we look at reforming a lot of our various public assistance programs. We have to ensure that they're a ladder out of poverty and not a roadblock to those who want to work hard and simply get out of the system. A common hurdle for both businesses and workers is what we call the cliff effect. Last year, I had the opportunity to spend a little bit of time at various shelters across the state. If you've had a chance to visit some of the shelters, they're all a little bit different. And it's an amazing opportunity. You hear a lot of different stories, not just from the managers of the shelters, but from the individuals. And about a month ago, Valerie had invited a group of the shelter managers to come and visit at the Bridges House. Valerie has done this amazing thing where building bridges with the bridges, I think is what she calls it, where she brings in groups, I think is a great name. You know, we bring in groups, nonprofits, organizations, individuals, right? And we use the Bridges House as kind of a gathering place to share ideas, to hear real firsthand stories from stakeholders and those individuals. And in this group, we brought in some of the folks that manage a lot of the shelters across the state. And when we asked them, you know, what is the single biggest issue, the single biggest challenge facing, and in this case, a lot of the women in the shelters, a lot of them are single moms, a lot of them are in tough situations. Maybe they're in recovery, maybe they're in abusive relationships. Right? They're getting some public assistance now in various ways, but they said the number one issue was that fiscal cliff, that these individuals, again, often young, single moms, some in trouble, some in tough domestic violence situations who rely on government assistance in their time of need. They want to work their way off those programs. They want independence. They want an escape, but they find themselves trapped or discouraged from accepting better job opportunities because their increased incomes will cut them off completely from assistance in a moment's notice. The result of that, those individuals have declined promotions. They've declined better jobs. They work fewer hours. And unfortunately, believe it or not, they've actually remained in abusive relationships or tried to hide their incomes so they could maintain eligibility for programs. Instead of encouraging employment advancement, our system right now incentivizes people to remain on state support. And yes, this might make some sense in the short term, but in the long term, we end up harming the people who often need the most help. And frankly, the dynamic simply makes no sense. And working together, I believe we can create revenue-neutral reforms to end the cliff effect in our state. We can provide more reasonable off-ramps. We can provide more reasonable off-ramps for these individuals, a way that encourages the dignity of work, a way that saves rather than costs taxpayers, and gives those receiving benefits the greatest gift of economic stability, a good job that allows them the independence to support their family. It won't be easy, but I do believe the pathway is there, and I'm challenging the legislature to work with us and simply find better results for these individuals.